A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sim. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display? I eventually had to go down to the cellar. That's the display department. With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
You are just number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 98. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and today we are continuing our discussion of Alternative 3. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
Alternative 3 was the final episode of the Anglia TV documentary Science Report. It was a 50-minute show that was on the ITV network.
And this 50-minute show that we're talking about went out in June 1977, and it's an unusual show for us to be talking about here, Brian.
Yes, and as the creator said, it's all true, apart from the lies.
And if you haven't listened to our last show yet, we should give you our spoiler warning now. It is very difficult to talk about Alternative 3 without getting into some spoilers, so if you haven't listened to our first episode, you might want to stop and listen to that now, and then if you can, try and watch this show Alternative 3 before we continue with our discussions, because we are going to get into some more of the details here, Brian.
Yes, we are. We won't spoil everything, but we will certainly have some spoilers. And Alternative 3, as we mentioned in the last episode, was of course a hoax documentary, so it was done very much in documentary style and had some hints in the credits, that the closing credits, that revealed that it was in fact a hoax. So Science Report was doing this investigation into the brain drain and missing scientists that apparently went to Heathrow Airport in London and then disappeared, and the link to NASA, of all things. And they discussed climate change and the greenhouse effect, which was quite a new idea at the time, and the looming ecological disaster which seemed to be coming for the Earth.
Absolutely. And as you say, Brian, these were sort of phrases and concepts that weren't very familiar to us back in the 70s. Of course, now we all talk about climate change and we're all familiar with the greenhouse effect. But this show, putting them up there on the screen for us, it really sounded very impressive. And of course, it was backed up by this very authoritative figure of Professor Carl Gerstein from Cambridge University, who discusses these ideas with the presenter, Tim Brinton. And of course, it's Professor Gerstein who actually eventually, after some prompting from Tim Brinton, will reveal to us exactly what Alternative 3 is. And as you've probably guessed as we've gone along, Alternative 3 was a plan to get off the Earth, or as Carl Gerstein said, to get off this planet before it's too late.
Exactly. And still there were details how this was supposed to happen, where or exactly what they were going to do. There were still a lot of mysteries there. But yeah, the key that we're introduced to partway through the second half of the show was, yes, there is this plan to somehow leave the Earth. And in their ongoing interviews with retired NASA astronaut Bob Grodin, he starts to reveal more about the plans, and he is no longer quite as on the ball as he used to be and sort of lets some things slip, so we get some revelations there.
Yes, that's right. They almost ply him with drink, or rather he sort of assists in plying himself with drink and starts to, his tongue loosens, doesn't it, Brian?
Yes, they get into that quite a bit, and it's pretty effective actually, fairly convincing.
Yes, it is. And all shot on this rather sort of grainy film stock, so that it looks like they were almost filming in secret with him. And it's very effective. And of course, we've had this one shock halfway through the show where Carl Gerstein tells us what Alternative 3 is, that this idea that somehow or other the human race was going to have to get off the planet, or that some parts of it were going to have to get off the planet. And then all the other mysteries lead us along to another huge shock, which we won't give away. But it is very dramatic at the end of the show, Brian.
Yes, and of course we get the scenarios involved here that are hidden behind the scenes get more and more complex and more elaborate and detailed as they go along, which is, as I mentioned before, really very intriguing and sort of a very sort of interesting build-up to this investigation, this sort of documentary-type investigation.
And, of course, it's all presented very matter-of-factly as a documentary, you know, and it takes us along and carries us along on this journey of this investigation with these reporters. But as you've said already, Brian, as we've discussed, Alternative 3 was a hoax documentary. It was a spoof, although spoof rather dismissed it rather lightly because it was extremely well done.
Yes, and it was intended as an April Fool's Day broadcast. Originally, this was sort of set up and tied into Science Report because their last episode was scheduled for April 1st. It turned out there were some delays due to scheduling, industrial action, and so on. And it was actually broadcast sometime in June, not in April.
But as you say, intended to be an April Fool's joke and playing on a tradition on British television of April Fool's jokes going back several years and still continuing to this day with television networks and British newspapers trying to fool us all on the 1st of April. Perhaps the most famous one in British television history before Alternative 3 was the infamous Spaghetti Tree broadcast in 1957, where again a very authoritative British broadcaster called Richard Dimbleby managed to convince most of the country that spaghetti was grown on trees, and they produced very convincing footage of Italian farmers harvesting the crop. So that's part of the tradition we have here of these rather strange hoaxes going out around April on the television. And I don't know, do they do that sort of thing on Canadian and American television, Brian?
I'm not sure. You don't see that much of it, but I think there is some of it. Certainly you have news programs slipping in little jokes and stories here and there on April 1st. I don't think you have quite the elaborate documentaries. At least I haven't seen many of them. But you do have some sorts of things there. Certainly the Spaghetti Tree broadcast in 57, a tremendous number of people believed it because it was the BBC.
Absolutely. And we'll perhaps get to some of the reasons why we don't get these shows so much in other countries in a minute. This particular broadcast, Alternative 3, was originally intended to go out on the same day in the UK and in Australia and New Zealand and in the US. But that simultaneous broadcast didn't happen, Brian.
Well, at least it didn't happen in all countries. There were some broadcasts that were either same day or very close to same day. It was broadcast in Australia and New Zealand and Canada and elsewhere as well. But the US networks did not broadcast it. And it turned out that it seems there were some regulations that the American broadcasters had to adhere to that prevented them from broadcasting all-out hoax programs, that it looks like these were put in place in about 1938 after the famous War of the Worlds radio broadcast that did in fact cause a panic in 1938.
Very interesting. A link to War of the Worlds here with this British television show, with the Americans, as you say, not broadcasting it or being unable to broadcast it or possibly refusing to broadcast it. It's all very strange, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, it is. And now in retrospect, there are some who say that War of the Worlds was the big hoax for radio and Alternative 3 was the equivalent big hoax for television.
What exactly can you tell us about Ballantyne?
What I remember of Ballantyne is he showed up at NASA with some tape that he made. And he got pretty damn excited when they played it back on that jukebox.
Jukebox?
Well, the decoder. I mean, you can pick up a signal if you got the equipment, but you can't unscramble that.
Without NASA's equipment?
That's right. And some young guy help him do it. You should have known better than that.
Was it this man?
It produced quite a response and quite a reaction, which we'll talk about now a bit, Brian. It was fairly instant and dramatic over here in the UK when it was shown. And almost immediately that the show finished, the ITV phone switchboard was jammed with calls from viewers, very concerned about what they'd seen and desperately seeking more information about it.
And of course, the callers were told it was a hoax. And the production team stuck to their famous line, "It's all true, apart from the lies."
which is a great line, actually, isn't it? It's a good tagline for this show, Brian.
Yes, absolutely.
And the next day, the newspapers were full of stories about the television show and many complaints about the show as well. Many people obviously very distressed, disturbed by what they'd seen on screen and the implications of it. So quite a lot about it in the newspaper.
Yes, and the reviewers were divided as to whether it was fantastic TV that was very well done or an outrage. And there were certainly people who believed it, and then when they found out that it was a hoax, were very upset that they were being fed this false information that seemed so convincing.
And we can get a bit upset when we're deceived by broadcasters. You can understand some of the reaction, I think, because this was a very convincing show.
Yes, there are some newspaper clips that you can see along with the DVD for this that are pretty strong in their words. There was really some quite dramatic controversy about this.
And quite entertaining to read now, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely.
Spin-offs from this show, Alternative 3, there was, I suppose, one very important one, which was that an author called Leslie Watkins, who sort of worked with the TV writer David Ambrose, and Watkins produced a novelization of the television play, which came out the next year in 1978. And if you can find images of the cover on the internet, you will see that it was titled Alternative 3 and then had the tagline, "The horrifying full story behind the explosive TV documentary." So another great tagline there for a book, Brian.
Oh, of course. And the book's success led to the spread of the Alternative 3 legend. And, of course, the book and the TV show became the basis for all kinds of conspiracy theories. Many of them probably from people who had not actually seen the TV show and only knew the book. The TV show was never repeated in the UK, although it was actually shown many times in Japan and was quite popular there.
Yes, apparently it's very popular in Japan on their television. Yeah, very strange, but never repeated here in the UK. And of course, as we've said, the end of the television show makes it fairly clear that it's a hoax. But I'm not sure whether the book makes it clear that it's a hoax. And as you say, Brian, that's probably where the conspiracy theory has grown from. People who haven't seen the television show but have read the book and have then heard that the television show can't be rebroadcast and that it was, you know, prohibited from being shown in the US. And understandably, the legend has grown and grown.
And of course, there are conspiracy theorists who say that the things they did to label it as a hoax were part of the conspiracy, and it was actually all true, and nothing was invented, and the various footage we see was real footage, and so on.
Absolutely. There was a fairly well-known conspiracy theorist writer called Jim Keith, and in 1994 he published a book called Casebook on Alternative 3, UFOs, Secret Societies and World Control. You can sort of see where he's going with that particular title. And he argued that the television documentary was actually for real. And as you say, Brian, he argued that the hoax element of it was in itself part of the conspiracy to deceive and to try and convince people that this wasn't true, whereas he was uncovering the truth behind the documentary.
Yes. And of course, you don't have to search very far on the internet to find websites which will believe and tell you to believe that Alternative 3 was telling the truth and that nothing in it was invented or a hoax at all.
So here is this 50-minute broadcast on British television in the late 1970s, and over 30 years later, people still arguing about whether it was true or not, and still believing that some of the secrets apparently revealed by this hoax documentary were true.
So we should talk about the good and the bad, our usual comments about what we thought about this. So, Eamon, what did you like about Alternative 3?
Well, I think the first thing to say, one of the things we both like about it, I know, is the fact that it's done absolutely straight-faced. It's done very seriously, very, you know, authoritatively with Tim Brinton presenting it. They really take it very seriously, don't they, Brian?
Yes, it had a very authentic documentary style to it. It was something where you could tell they knew how Science Report and these kinds of documentaries worked, and they made it work and look just like that.
Absolutely. I mean, the look of it is fantastic. They make it look like a documentary. They had this great use of stock footage of various space missions, footage of Apollo. They have some animated graphics suggesting what the space shuttle would be like, which, of course, this was before the space shuttle had actually launched. So that's their use of film is very good, Brian.
Yes, it is. All of that stock footage, especially the Apollo stock footage they used, was very good. And the way they used Apollo footage but changed the audio to have different radio communications lines between the mission control and the astronauts, that was very good too.
I also liked the apparently secret filming that they did, where they set up filming of a couple of the characters in the program, and then they use this, as we've said, this deliberately degraded film stock to make it look like it was either secretly filmed or that it was filmed in very poor circumstances with poor lighting and so on. And that looks very good as well, doesn't it, Brian?
Yes, that was good. I also liked the build-up of the show, how it started with something very simple about the missing persons issues and then brought something else in that also on its own was pretty simple with the scientist who had died in a car accident and then something else. They start bringing in these different threads and it sort of gradually builds up and is just so intriguing, and how it's taking all these different bits and pieces and slowly building up to something more complex. And by the time you get into the second half of it, and then, you know, well into the second half of it, you have this very complex thing built up that is really quite gripping and interesting, how it builds that up.
They build the mystery fantastically. I mean, you know, it just, as you say, it just grows and grows with revelations along the way, and your mind boggles as you see what's going on. It's great. It's really well done. The people involved up on the screen, as we've said, we've got Tim Brinton, who is an interesting character. He was a TV newscaster. He'd been a TV presenter and an actor, and he would later go on to be a member of Parliament. And he gives it this absolute sort of authority and verity, doesn't he, Brian? He's just so convincing.
Yes, it really does add that style that is perfect for the documentary.
Special effects. We don't really have many special effects apart from what they did with the film stock, but there is one, and it's quite remarkable, and we can't really say very much about it other than perhaps to mention that it was just produced by the director's finger.
Yeah, it was one of these things, just carefully moving things around by touching them underneath and that sort of thing. But yes, it was very effective. So on the negative side, what did you think was a little weaker with Alternative 3, Eamon?
I don't think there's much at all, Brian. I think the only problem is watching it now, 30 years later, is that some of the actors involved have gone on to become much sort of more recognisable and well-known. And so one or two of the people you think, oh, yes, I recognise them from something else. And then, of course, when we get to the astronaut Bob Grodin, that is a bit of a giveaway now, isn't it, Brian?
Yes, it is a bit of a giveaway when you see Shane Rimmer. And Shane Rimmer we've seen in so many different shows because he was one of the sort of go-to actors for being an American actor who was located in the UK and doing lots of work on UK shows.
Absolutely, yes. I mean, he's popped up on several shows. His voice is very recognisable, and he's been in Bond films. So now it's quite obvious that when they go to interview this astronaut, you think, well, that's Shane Rimmer, and it's a bit of a giveaway. But of course, at the time, none of these actors would have been so well known, and it would have been entirely convincing.
Yes, the one other thing that was too bad and a bit of a giveaway was the young American character we see in the first half, the young American guy, is apparently a British actor doing an American accent, and it's not that convincing as an American accent. You can tell it's a little off, which might make you sort of wonder a little bit. So that was too bad that they didn't have a better American accent there.
Yes, I mean, unfortunately, as we know, at that time, we only had two American actors here in the UK. We had Ed Bishop and Shane Rimmer, and that was it.
And I think neither of them were quite right for that particular role.
No, and he is a slight problem because he does stand out a bit more as being as acting, as opposed to the others who seem entirely convincing as journalists and all the experts that the various people interview. So, yes, there are a couple of people who stand out and make you think, well, it's not quite believable. Was there anything else that you had problems with, Brian?
There wasn't really. It's a very different type of show from almost anything else I've seen. and it did what it did very well.
Yes, it is a very different show for us to be talking about here, quite an unusual one, and one that I do remember seeing when it first came out. And I certainly remember next day at school, the only topic of conversation was this show. Did you see it? And did you believe it? Quite dramatic, and quite happy to have rediscovered it here on British Invaders.
So let's talk about the availability. If you want to get a hold of this and watch it, how would you do that?
Well, fortunately, it was finally released on a DVD. So here in Region 2, we've got the DVD release, which includes the 50-minute show. It has a 30-minute discussion that takes place between Tim Brinton, the writer David Ambrose, and the director Christopher Miles. And there's a few other little extras on the DVD set. There's some production stills, and perhaps most, you know, intriguingly and entertainingly, there are those various newspaper clippings that appeared in the days after the show, filled with either outrage or with glowing reviews of a marvellous piece of television. So they're all there on the DVD.
Yes, those are great.
They are fun to look at. And here in the UK, you can get this DVD on Amazon for only £3, an absolute bargain. And it's also available for rental on the Love Film site.
Yes, that same European DVD release on Amazon.com is available as an import for $15. It's not available on Netflix or .ca, of course, because there's no North American release. But the British release is in fact a Region Zero, or all regions release. It uses the European style PAL resolution. So some North American DVD players that are not region free, but are regular Region One players, some of them will play it and some won't. But almost any computer that you would have that plays DVDs will play this one. So you can order that from Amazon.com or from Amazon.co.uk directly, and get it that way, and you should be able to find a way to play it relatively easily.
But if you don't want to go that route, it is actually fairly easy to find Alternative 3 on YouTube and on Google Video at the moment. And also, again, you don't have to search too far to find the video hosted on a conspiracy website where it is rather dramatically described as the most explosive television program ever made. So you can find it there as well to watch. There's also the book. Leslie Watkins' book is actually quite hard to come by now as it's out of print and second-hand copies are fairly expensive, but it is available to read online at the archive, www.archive.org, and I'll put the full link up in the Facebook page when this show comes out.
Yes, I think something has to be a fairly remarkable book to be added to the Internet Archive that way.
So, having said how you can watch it, as ever, we get to the important question of whether you should watch it. Brian, kick us off.
Well, this is a very interesting one, of course. As a dramatic piece, this is not as good as the very best of the things we've talked about on British Invaders. But for what it is, as a hoax documentary, it is spectacular. It does something that I haven't seen done quite the same way anywhere else, and it does it very well. Basically, succeeds on just about everything that it tries to do. Unusual, remarkable piece. I would say well worth watching. Take a look at it. It's good stuff.
It is good stuff. It is, as you say, it's an unusual show for anybody to be discussing. But we've had fun watching it here on British Invaders, and we hope you'll have fun watching it as well, because it is really worth having a look at. It's only 50 minutes long. It's only £3 here in the UK, and it's just a little gem. And as I say, I was so happy to rediscover this through British Invaders. So if we haven't spoilt it completely for you, do try and get a look at Alternative 3. It's as you say, Brian, quite spectacular and extremely well done.
And even shipping it from Amazon.co.uk to the US or Canada or elsewhere is not actually going to be that expensive. It'll still be a pretty inexpensive little deal.
Yes, and the copies of the video on the internet sites are not great quality, so you might want to try and track down the DVD because it's certainly worth it.
Yeah, the DVD presentation is very good with the extras it has and so on. So, in summary, Alternative 3 was apparently a science documentary on Science Report that began by discussing the brain drain and how there were apparently missing persons, people who disappeared from London's Heathrow Airport and then appeared to be nowhere to be found. And then also talked about a scientist who had mysteriously died in a car accident, and some things with other scientists, and then strange questions involving the U.S. and Soviet space programs, and some very unusual things, and developed into this very intriguing and complex scenario that was this hoax documentary that is fairly unique in what it did and how it did it.
Absolutely. It's unique, it's spectacular, and it's a double recommendation here on British Invaders. So next time, please jump back and join us. We are off to the swinging 60s, and we're going to follow the adventures of a gentleman adventurer, an action hero, and we're going to look at the show called Adam Adamant Lives.
Yes, that will be a fun one, getting back to 1960s BBC fare and mixing up the Victorian gentleman with the swinging 60s, so that should be fun.
And we're back on the BBC as well, I think.
Yes, we are. So you can reach us at britishinvaders@gmail.com, and you can find us at www.britishinvaders.com. We have a Facebook group, so if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you will find us there. Thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada, signing off.
Yes, thank you very much, and until next time, this is Eamon in England saying that the truth is still out there.